And now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Well, happy Labor Day. As if that were a meaningful holiday anymore. It used to be. It really did. If you're old enough, you remember. You remember the parade in your local town or your city. Union members, hard hats, steel workers, pipe fitters, drop forge operators, coal miners, truck drivers, waitresses, nurses, you know, the working class, cops, firefighters, the working class. You remember those people, right? Those men or women? No, I'm not going to get into some big downer diatribe about what Labor Day consists of now. It's funny that we, not funny haha, but funny weird, that we still celebrate this day after 35 years of focused, intentional destruction of unions. Here's the truth. Without unions, there is no working class. There is no working class. They're the wealthy and the poor. With unions, there's a working class. But unrestrained capitalism does not want a working class. Working class is too, can't be too volatile. You know, they drink beer after work and shit like that, and too many beers, and they're going to start demanding decent wages and decent safety rules in their shops, and don't want that. Anyway, happy Labor Day, such as it is. I watched both funerals over the weekend, the going home celebration for Aretha Franklin and memorial service at the National Cathedral in Washington for McCain. And given a choice, if I had to choose, you can only attend one. I would have picked the one in Detroit, the going home celebration for Aretha Franklin. Boy, I'll tell you, when was that? Friday? I think it was Friday. Thursday or Friday. I may have mentioned it already. But talk about a celebration of life for Aretha Franklin. Now, they had a celebration of life for John McCain also. I'm not denying that, but the difference isn't a difference stark between how white folk and black folk do their funerals. I noticed that early on as a kid, about the same time I noticed a difference between a Catholic church and a Protestant church. You know, I went to a Protestant church, and it was fairly sedate. Some of my worst punishments from my grandmother was when I did something in church that she didn't like. Too much squirming, too much whispering. And I knew when we got back to the house, there'd be a weeping willow, or not weeping willow, but a pussy willow switch waiting for me. But the Catholic Church, in comparison, was so solemn. All these dead statues of dead people. You know, first, there was Jesus up on the cross, but John the Baptist. I saw one time they were holding up his head. I mean, what kind of stuff is that? Ooh, Lord have mercy. But after getting through the shock of the difference between a Protestant church and a Catholic church, then, I don't know when or how, but I was introduced to a sermon, just a sermon at African-American church, and it blew my socks off. I mean, it really did. I thought, oh, my God, you know, lightning bolt is going to strike this building because these people are being disrespectful of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. I used to think that way. Of course, it never happened. The people who were celebrating their religion in the black church were celebrating their religion. And the people in the white church, I always had the feeling that people in the white Protestant church wanted to cut loose and, you know, stand up in one of the pews like I've seen happen so many times in a black church and just start testifying, you know, if the choir's singing or the preacher's talking, that's all right. Just stand up and start testifying because the Spirit is moving you. I've always thought that white people always wanted to applaud after a real nice sermon or a nice choir presentation. And in some churches, you know, some white churches, they allow that now, having stolen it, like we've stolen everything, from the black church. Yeah, oh, hey, all right, yay. But I'm way digressing. The National Cathedral celebration for John McCain, which is the one with all the politics, is the one I'll probably focus on here. I don't know. Is it permissible? I'll keep going back to Aretha Franklin. Is it permissible? Is it not respectful? Is it not disrespectful to say, I had a damn good time at her funeral? I mean, I wonder if that's okay to say that. I wasn't there. I was here in Atlanta, but I watched it. I felt like I was there. Oh, Lord, have mercy. And some of the testifying and preaching and eulogies. Michael Dyson, is that his last name, Dyson? He unloaded on the Trump monster that just, well, had me up on in the living room. I jumped off the couch. I'm going, amen, hallelujah. And I thought, wait a minute. You're a punk-ass atheist. Sit down and shut up. Meghan McCain ripped Trump several new body orifices, and the big crybaby whiny-ass punk had to respond with an all-caps tweet, you know. But she, when it was, I think Meghan was the first one to eulogize her father. And that was heartbreaking. It really was. I, you know, there are times when it doesn't make any difference what a person's political points of view might be. Not always. I mean, if I'm alive when Trump passes, I'll go watch the goddamn cartoon channel rather than watch that asshole's. I can imagine how they're going to eulogize him. Oh, Jesus. But to watch Meghan McCain give her full-throated and very emotional eulogy for her father, if you watch that and didn't get tears in your eyes, then you're probably dead yourself. But among other things, she said, quote, "We gather here to mourn the passing of American greatness, the real thing. Not cheap rhetoric from men who will never come near the sacrifice he gave so willingly, nor the opportunistic appropriation of those whose lives of comfort and privilege, or those who live lives of comfort and privilege while he suffered and served." Now, of course, Trump knew who she was talking about, so did everybody in the church. "My father was a great man," she added. "He was a great warrior. He was a great American. I admired him for all these things, but I loved him because he was a great father. The America of John McCain," she also said, "has no need to be made great again because America was always great." Now, she said a lot more, but those were the two statements that you know, just made Trump's balls ache, I'm sure, because he, you know, on some level, I don't know what level, but on some butt level three or whatever, this ugly, hateful man understands that according to American definitions of a hero, not mine, maybe not yours, but according to American definitions of a hero, as it's applied to someone who has been in the uniform of the U.S. military, John McCain was one. Donald Trump was a little pissant. Donald Trump was a flea on a pissant's ass. Donald Trump was nothing. And on some level, Trump knows that. So he just couldn't stand it. He just couldn't stand it. After listening to the service and all the things that were said about McCain, this ugly son of a bitch had to tweet, "Make America Great Again!" All caps, in perfect defiance to what Meghan McCain had said. The country doesn't need to be made great again because it's always been great. Now, you and I can argue about that and argue we have. But in the context of a daughter talking about her now dead father, as far as little old Mikey is concerned, I give her all the room she wants, all the room she needs. Would that my daughter Molly would give me such a eulogy when it's my time and her time to go through a ceremony like that for me. But I watched all of the all of the McCain funeral, even the bit. And this really, I couldn't help it. I got a giggle out of it. When George W. Bush, with all the subtlety of an ox in a china shop, reached over to give Michelle Obama a mint. You know, I swear to God, he looked like a fourth grader passing something to the girl next to him, right? You want one of these? Don't look. Don't anybody. Now, was it cute? Yeah, it was cute. In that moment, did I see George Bush as a war criminal? No. To be honest, I didn't see him as a former president either. I just saw him as somebody who, for some reason, was pretty well known and famous, sitting next to the First Lady of the United States. And by virtue of his proximity to her, he was obviously special. I'm saying if I just stepped off the ship from Jupiter and I didn't know he was a former president. But there she was, he was sitting next to Michelle Obama. So the seating indicated, you know, come on. Lighten up a little bit. The seating indicated that he must be important because he's sitting next to her. Next to Michelle Obama. Now, on the other side of Michelle, of course, is her husband. That's understandable. But this man sitting, and then he reaches over and gives her a mint. I saw it live, and I saw it 164 times that the networks played it after that.
Why was that so significant?
So anyway, I thought it was a kind of a meet-cute moment, you know? But it was fleeting, it was passing. And the part that was particularly, I can't think of a word, I'm sorry, particularly blank for me, you can put a drop of word in there if you want to, was Obama's eulogy. I mean, Obama and McCain were not friends. They weren't drinking buddies. They weren't like Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan by any means. But I think Obama understood the significance of McCain choosing him, Obama, as one of the two VIP speakers, other than his family. Nobody was more important in that funeral than Meghan McCain, but the fact that Senator McCain chose, I mean, George Bush was not a surprise, although Bush and McCain were not asshole buddies either. Matter of fact, McCain had some pretty powerfully negative things to say about Bush during Bush's presidency. Oh, my God, did he ever? But it was a powerful thing to watch. On what level, I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know what you did, but I did not try to analyze the feelings as they came up. I just let them come up. There was no point in sitting there being all analytical, trying to analyze my feelings, what they represented, where they came from, how could I feel X, Y, and Z because persons A, B, and C doing the speaking were not my most favorite political figures. But rather than get involved in all that intellectual horse shit, when I sat down to watch this funeral ceremony, I just decided, let it go, let it be, and just see what kind of emotions come up. And, of course, Meghan McCain's initial eulogy was what kind of set the tone for me, because she's a daughter eulogizing her father. All the political crapola, real and symbolic, that this funeral represented didn't factor into my emotional response to her words, Bush's words, Obama's words, two, I think, of McCain's other children who gave very brief. One was a slice from a poem, Robert Service, I think. So, just for the record, those two celebrations, as different as they were from each other, as entirely different, were the capstone for me of a very intense week. Of course, this week coming is going to be, you should pardon the expression, a super mindfuck, because tomorrow starts the confirmation hearings on Brett Kavanaugh, a person who has no more right, no more qualification to be a Supreme Court justice than I do, and I have zero. Kathy, do you have something to segue me out? This next topic is so totally different from what I was just talking about. If you have like a maybe quick break, I'll be right back. Stick around.
I don't need security. I've got a Colt 45 in here with me. I'll scare off intruders in my fatigues, black jackets, and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't see things their way. Yeah, I'm on the right side.
The red tide that has been attacking Florida's beaches It's getting worse. I'm trying to figure out the words to say here. It's getting much worse. Red tide is, well, I've lived in Florida. I've seen it before. You don't see anything red. What you see is a lot of stuff dead. It's a bacteria, I believe. I don't think it's a parasite. I think it's a bacteria that develops as a result of a change in water chemistry, usually brought on by the water being too warm. That's one theory, I guess. I guess it is not absolutely certain. Maybe it is to the scientists. I don't know. But a red tide is one that kills marine life. And the result is the marine life, with the changing of the tides, the marine life washes up on the beaches. And by marine life, it's everything. It's not just fish, but fiddler crabs, jellyfish, all sorts of sea life dies. And as you know, when sea life dies, it rots. And when it rots, the stench is unbearable. The stench that is permeating South Florida right now, the west southwest part of Florida, it's creeping up the southwest coast. Tampa's next, which, by the way, is where I saw my first red tide. It was in Tampa way, way, way back in the early 60s. But as it creeps up the coast, it's making people sick, very sick. Headaches, tremors, sore throat, coughing. NBC has had a piece on their website about a woman. We'll call her, what should we call her? Monette. I could say Monet, but let's just call her Monette. And she went for a walk on the beach, even though there was a red tide. She lives in Siesta Key. If you're familiar with southwestern Florida, that is right off the coast of Sarasota. So this woman, Monette, went for a walk on the beach, and a couple hours later it hit her. Headaches, nausea, but then when she went to a doctor, she realized what was going on. Anyway, this red tide, it's a wave of microorganisms that chokes sea life. And it hit the Gulf of Mexico last November. This is September, 10 months ago. And now it has spread over about 130 miles of Florida's southwest coast. And the toy governor of Florida, this moron Rick Scott, has issued a state of emergency for seven counties where the waterways and coastlines are filled with this putrid, rotting fish floating in the now brass-colored water. Now, the red tide also poses a severe threat to humans. The microorganisms involved here emit something called brevetoxins, B-R-V-E toxins, brevetoxins. And these can get blown up into the air, and when they're breathed in, they constrict passages in your lungs, not terribly different from what cigarette smoke does, I guess. And that causes people to cough and have difficulty breathing. And if you're suffering from some sort of a pulmonary problem anyway, COPD or what have you, this is the type of thing that can absolutely ruin your retirement in Florida, because it will kill you. An allergist in that area of South Florida, quoted by NBC, says he's seen 20% more patients with breathing difficulties this summer than in previous years. And he issued a warning. This doctor, he said the brevetoxins have not lasted this long before. Red Tide hasn't lasted this long. So long-term effects of brevetoxins aren't known. He said, for people that live exposed months and months, we don't know the long-term effects, which is what is happening on the southwest coast of Florida. And as to be expected, red tides, according to NBC, have increased in frequency and persistence over the last 20 years. Gee, I wonder what the connection is. Now, the historical record, according to record keepers, is a little bit too sketchy to say whether the red tides are more prevalent. You'd think they would have a record of that, right? But I guess not. The current episode has lasted more than 9 months, but it does not yet approach the 17-month red tide that hit South Florida from the end of 2004 until early 2006. Or the red tide just a few years before that, which didn't dissipate for an epic 21 months. Woo! The doctor said his patients, like I mentioned, with lung diseases like asthma have been affected particularly. But not just those people. This doctor said, quote, we're seeing people come off the street with no lung disease who have these symptoms, end quote. There has been an uptick in emergency room visits for respiratory problems, mostly in children. Now, the state's two U.S. senators, Democrat Nelson, Republican Rubio, last week they won Senate approval for $1 million in funding to study the health impacts of both the red tide and a toxic blue-green algae that has infested rivers, canals, and lakes in the south end of the state. These two senators said the money would identify health impacts that may have been underrated and understudied in the past. Well, but now you're getting into science, boys, and, you know, this administration, this Congress, you don't want to go too far in science because science is antithetical to what these senators and representatives, especially the representatives, they're the ones that control the purse strings. But too much money, that's why it's only $1 million, I would imagine, too much money put into this to study the effects and what it is and where it's going and yada, yada, yada. That leads from one thing and that leads to another and then that leads to another. Next thing you know, son of a bitch, you'd be talking about global warming and we can't have that. So I don't know what they're going to find with their pissy $1 million to study. Anyway, the woman, Monette, she wasn't sure where to turn because this has really affected her this year. She's experienced it before, but she said nothing like this. So she called Florida's Poison Control Center, and she was told one thing she could do is wash her clothing frequently because this toxin can cling to fabric. And she's pregnant, by the way. Her obstetrician recommended Benadryl, but that doesn't get rid of her cough or her shortness of breath. Probably makes her sleepy as hell. And she's worried about the long-term effects on the health of the baby girl that she's expecting in January. Three and a half months away. I think when I started hearing about this story several months ago, I started thinking about the people who moved to Florida, the retirees. It became a cliche. I guess it's the warm weather. The first time I ever went to Florida was in 1959. Well, it's in the book. Sort of. But the first time I ever went to Florida was in 1959, when the population of the United States was about half what it is now. Matter of fact, the population of the world was about a third of what it is now. Do y'all remember that? Wasn't that long ago? Jesus. But what I remembered about Florida in 1959 was a building boom. And in 1960 and 61, a building boom. I mean, every place you look, these little cement block houses were going up. Cement block houses. I was down there when I was 22, and I remember a real estate sales guy. I forget the circumstances of our meeting, but he said, I can get you one of these houses. I was renting an apartment. I can get you one of these houses. I said, well, you know, a mortgage. Oh, no. He said, look, I'll tell you what, $200 down. That's all you need. And your house payments would be about $50 a month for a pile of cement blocks. I mean, let's face it. These were subdivisions that were going up like mushrooms and cow pies after a rainstorm. They were just all over the place, especially down. I remember Sarasota. There was a main road that went out of Sarasota heading east. It was called the B Road, B-E-E, the B Road or the B Highway. I don't know why. And all along the B Road, on each side, there were subdivision. Jesus, God, it was just going up, being built. But I remember thinking, this is a pretty cool place to retire. Beautiful weather. Of course, I was there in the first time as a kid in December. So, yeah, the weather was beautiful. Beautiful weather. I love the sky, the tropical skies, that deep azure blue and then the big, enormous, puffy white clouds, enormous and puffy white because they were loaded with moisture, which is the kind of skies we're getting over Atlanta now because the air is becoming loaded with moisture because of global warming, which causes evaporation, which makes the great big tropical clouds that we used to look at in the Bahamas or in Puerto Rico, now they're over downtown Atlanta. Woo, shit. Where was I? Oh, that's right. St. Pete. And the green benches in St. Pete, they're gone. But the green benches, St. Pete was famous for that. That's where you could walk for block after block after block after block. Just keep walking from the city center out along Central Avenue on the green benches. And they were full of old people. That's funny for me to say that, full of old people. But they were. They were full of old people sitting there flirting and trying to make hookups. You know, I know a lot of people, hookup? Goddamn lawyer talking about grandma and grandma. Yeah. And they were seriously trying to get something going, which was shocking to me. I mean, I was 17. I looked at that and went, oh. But Florida always was Florida, is what I'm getting to. It was the place where you could go reinvent yourself over and over and over and over again. I remember the first time I went to Key West, there's a sign there that said, this is where you go when you have no place left to go. I get that. But the red tide, screwing everything up for these retirees who might want to imitate a commercial for AARP and walk along the beach. You've seen those commercials, right? Grandma and grandpa, and they both look like they're so healthy they could start running along the beach or lifting weights while they ran along the beach. And your typical old couple don't necessarily look like that. But there they are on the beach. And it's beautiful, the white sugary sand and the azure sky with the big puffy tropical clouds and the palm trees. Now you have all that, but you also have the stench of rotting sea life. Now, we all know what rotten fish smells like, right? But unless you have been in an area where there are massive amounts of dead sea life, you don't know what stink is. Trust me. Trust me. I'm sure everybody's been to Florida by now, right? Donald Trump today. Oh, yeah, this is Monday, September 3rd, 2018, Labor Day. Today, Monkey Man blasted Jeff Sessions again. Poor Jeff Sessions. Poor Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions has to keep putting up with this shit from this honky son of a bitch with the funny hair and this Yankee son of a bitch who doesn't understand the Southern way of life at all. But Jeff Sessions is going to just keep on keeping on. He doesn't, you know, I mean, Donald Trump can call him anything he wants to. Doesn't matter. Anyway, Trump went after him again today, and he was really pissed off about the indictments of these two Republican members of Congress last week, if you remember. I think one was last week, and the other one, I think, was a couple days before that. And he suggested that Jefferson Beauregard should not have been charged because they're Republicans. No, I'm shit you not. This is what Trump tweeted. Two long-running Obama-era investigations of two very popular Republican congressmen were brought to a well-publicized charge just ahead of the midterms by the Jeff Sessions Justice Department. Woo! Two easy wins. These two members of Congress now in doubt because there's not enough time. Good job, Jeff. Can you fucking believe that? Yeah, believe it. Believe it. Now, a decision by the Justice Department to hold off on prosecuting these two thugs who are up for re-election, holding off in order to help them with their re-election campaign would have been unethical and a blatantly politically motivated violation of the department's nonpartisan mission. Of course, it calls to mind 7, 8, 9, 10 days before the presidential election when Comey made his famous remarks. We found more emails! Now, Trump's comment today was the latest indication that the rancid little fucker who ran on a drain the swamp proposition had no intention of draining the swamp, especially where it concerns his supporters. They should be immune from prosecution. He's made that very clear. Anyone who can benefit Trump or has benefited Trump should be immune from prosecution. What the fuck? I mean, isn't that part of the divine right of kings? Yeah, matter of fact, it is. Oh, by the way, the Justice Department declined to comment on Trump's tweeting. And as CNN reports, the tweet today marked Trump's latest attacks on the Justice Department, which has a long history of carrying out investigations and pursuing indictments in a nonpartisan fashion. Federal prosecutors are strongly admonished not to let politics affect charging decisions in the way the president advocated today. Trump is such a bastard. He's such an ignorant man. He has no fucking idea. And if he does about how the Constitution works, if he does understand the rules of the Justice Department, then he sees those rules as there for him to break because he is Donald by God Trump. Huh? A 2016 Justice Department memo issued by then-Attorney General Loretta Lynch said this, quote, "Politics must play no role in the decisions of federal investigators or prosecutors regarding any investigations or criminal charges, period. Law enforcement officers and prosecutors may never select the timing of investigative steps or criminal charges for the purpose of affecting any election or for the purpose of giving an advantage or disadvantage to any candidate or political party, end quote, Loretta Lynch. I wonder why James Comey didn't follow that. Oh, well. So the two thugs, Representative Duncan Hunter, boy, is he a piece of work. He and his old lady are just, they're like Steve Mnuchin and his old lady, world-class fucking thieves. Just grab, grab, gimme, gimme, grab, grab. And Representative Chris Collins, Republican in New York. Collins, the New York dude, was charged with 13 counts of securities fraud, wire fraud, making false statements related to an alleged insider trading scheme. Okay. That's SOP for members of Congress from New York. What the fuck? It is. And then Duncan Hunter and his old lady were indicted for using campaign funds for personal use. And boy, did you see that list of shit that they used it for? Woo! Holy Toledo. Anyway, using campaign funds for personal use, were charged with accounts of wire fraud, falsifying records, campaign finance violations, and conspiracy. Both, of course, have pleaded not guilty. No, I didn't do shit. No, no. Well, Duncan Hunter said, oh, this is the deep state coming after me. No, asshole. It's law coming after you because you're a fucking criminal, just like your president. Now, under longstanding Justice Department custom, it says here, prosecutors generally avoid public disclosure of overt investigative steps involving a candidate within 60 days of an election. But the so-called 60-day rules is not an official regulation or found in any federal statute. Instead, it's up to prosecutors to use their best judgment and, above all else, make sure that political considerations play no role in investigative decisions. Right. Let's take a break, Kathy, if you would, please. I will be back momentarily. I hope you will, too. Now, regarding these two Republican thugs, Duncan Hunter of California and Chris Collins in New York, the tweet that Trump put out screeching and bullshitting and lying that this, somehow this has to do with the Obama era, which it doesn't, is just typical. This is what a mafia boss does. You defend your allies despite the evidence that you have committed crimes and despite the fact that you're now under or facing federal prosecution. It doesn't make any difference. When you're part of the mafia, whether it's American or Russian or Slobovian, doesn't matter. When you're part of the mafia, like Trump is, you go to bat for your soldiers, unmade men, especially the made men. Now, Trump, in his tweet, you know, made it very clear that these are investigations that began during the Obama administration, which is just more of his bullshit. And this is the part that really upsets me, is that his followers are too stupid to just figure out if that's true. It's not. The charge against Collins come from actions he took last year, including calls he placed to commit his crime while he was at a Trump White House picnic. Ooh, but that's Obama. And then the other punk ass, Duncan Hunter, his investigation also began last year. And who was president last year? With the House Ethics Committee, which is run by neo-fascist lawmakers who used to be Republicans, the House Ethics Committee announced in March of 2017 that it was holding off on taking action against Mr. Hunter, because the Justice Department had launched a criminal investigation into his use of campaign funds. That doesn't sound like the Obama era to me at all. Sounds like Trump. Well, it is Trump. That's why it sounds like Trump. The tweets also that Trump vomited out today, they also amount to his latest attacks against his own attorney general, who by law recused himself from the Russia investigation because he, Beauregard, was involved. He couldn't investigate something of this magnitude when he, Beauregard, had a small party. He couldn't do it. But Trump doesn't understand that. Mafia boss never understands that kind of shit. Of course, Trump has not and will not ever forgive poor old Beauregard for not being Trump's attorney general instead of the United States' attorney general. Trump just can't get that. And in the second tweet today, Trump said Democrats, quote, must love, said Sessions. Yeah, we love him. And in that second tweet, Trump also referenced the situation with Democrats and James Comey, who Trump fired last year. He said this, Trump did, quote, the Dems all hated him, Comey. Well, wanted him out, thought he was disgusting, until I fired him, all caps. Immediately he became a wonderful man, a saint-like figure, in fact, really sick. This poor miserable fucker. He can't understand nuance, subtlety, broad-based differences. It doesn't make any difference. This is what you get. It's the wrong pronoun. I'm just saying. This is what one gets when one accepts the bullshit of a con artist, a liar, a deceiver, an adulterer, a misuser of the federal bankruptcy laws. This is what you get. You get Donald Trump. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, a little bit on Brett Kavanaugh, whose hearings to be on the Supreme Court begin tomorrow. I'll be right back. Yeah, well, tomorrow, before the Senate Judiciary Committee, we will hear the lies and distortions and deceptions, all deliberate, by this phony Brett Kavanaugh.
Hi, right now, is Mike Malloy here. As you know, we've switched formats and are now broadcast exclusively on the Progressive Voices Network. But so that means you get fewer program interruptions, no corporate commercials, and lots of profanity. But our format change also means some of our radio listeners no longer hear the program. It's been a while since I mentioned our podcasts. So you may have forgotten that there is a way to listen to this program anytime you need a good dose of screaming. Visit MikeMalloy.com and subscribe to our podcast. You have your choice. You can listen to the ranting with the audio podcast or listen and watch me lose control with a video podcast subscription. As a podcast subscriber, you can download the program to your mobile device and take me with you. Wherever you go. And if you have a friend who needs a dose of truth seeking, you can give a gift subscription as well. That's MikeMalloy.com. And never miss a minute of the uncensored fun and frivolity.
Respected Roe v. Wade, the 40-year-old woman's right to privacy law, because Collins said, because Kavanaugh told her that it was, quote, settled law. end quote. Collins said, he said that he agreed with what Chief Justice Roberts said at his nomination hearing, in which he said it was settled law. Using the word settled doesn't mean shit. You know it. I know it. Susan Collins knows it. And the phonies who have used it in their appearances before the Senate confirmation, they know it too. That's bullshit. As CNN reports, any potential nominee asked about almost any Supreme Court case will likely say, it's settled. Don't ask me to comment on it. It's settled. Of course, if it comes up before me, I'll rip the shit out of it. But let's pretend like I said it's settled. Yeah. Now, what these guys, and they're mostly guys, usually say is that while a lower court nominee must accept a Supreme Court ruling, there is no higher than the Supreme Court, obviously, a sitting Supreme Court justice does not have to accept what a previous Supreme Court said. A Supreme Court justice, once he or she becomes a member of the Supreme Court, can unsettle settled law, very simply, by having a case come before it and voting in the majority to rip it to pieces. Very simple. Lower courts can't do that, but the Supreme Court can, hence the name Supreme, right before the word court. Here's an example. Earlier this year, the court overturned a 40-year-old precedent when it delivered a blow to public sector unions in striking down an Illinois law that required non-union workers to pay fees, like the union workers have to pay fees that go toward the efforts of collective bargaining. The Supreme Court, in its never-ending efforts in the past 40 years to utterly and absolutely assist in the destruction of collective bargaining and organized labor, the Supreme Court ruled that the freeloaders, the non-union members who heretofore had been required to pay like the union members for the benefits they were getting, now the non-union members didn't have to do shit. They could just sit back and accept the benefits. Of course, the problem with that comes from the word collective in collective bargaining. It takes everybody to chip in, to help, to get the job done. So just like Reagan Democrats who had their throats cut, these sons of bitches in the public sector unions who said, we don't want to pay, get ready to be fucked, whether you want to be fucked or not. That's what you did with your tacky ass little lawsuit. In front of the Supreme Court, your challenge to 40-year-old settled law, what you did was just hand these neo-fascist Supreme Court justices a very sharp knife to cut your own throats. I don't understand. I don't understand. Now, as far as John Roberts, remember John Roberts said, oh, well, yeah, you know, do you support Roe v. Wade? Well, you know, it's settled law. Do you support Roe v. Wade? That was a decision made in 1973. It's settled law. Do you support Roe v. Wade? This is how they do it. As Dianne Feinstein pointed out, it's not enough, she said, quote, it's not enough for Brett Kavanaugh to say that Roe is settled law. Chief Justice Roberts said the same thing in 2005, and then he voted in favor of a law that would have forced 75% of Texas clinics to close, clinics that may or may not have provided abortion services. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me, end quote, Dianne Feinstein. Yeah, so Roberts, you know, Roberts is as much of a fucking liar as the rest of these right-wingers. I don't give a shit how he is seen as a learned jurist. He's a lying son of a bitch. This is the part that I think every parent should impress upon their children. Always tell me the truth, because the first time you lie to me, and it becomes apparent that it's a lie. From that point forward, I will not be able to trust you 100%. Maybe 99.9, but it will be impossible for me to trust you 100% when I ask you a question. Now, you would think the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court would understand that. And you'd be wrong. Roberts testified in 2005. Like the other conservatives, Samuel Alito and Neil Gorsuch, that Roe was settled. Roberts said in 2005, quote, "It's settled as a precedent of the court entitled to respect." And at his confirmation hearing a year later in 2006, Sammy the Fish, Alito, said that Roe v. Wade had, quote, "been on the books for a long time and had been reaffirmed by the justices." Oh, please. Gorsuch, that sneaky son of a bitch who should not be on the Supreme Court at all, and had he been an honorable man, he would have told Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell to please go fuck themselves, because he was not going to participate in the theft of a Supreme Court seat. But Neil Gorsuch didn't say that, because Neil Gorsuch is a lying right-wing neo-fascist prick himself. Gorsuch, at his confirmation hearing, said that Planned Parenthood versus Casey, which was the title of a case that resulted in an opinion that reaffirmed the core holding of Roe, a woman's right to privacy. Please remember that Roe v. Wade was not about, specifically, about abortion. It was about a woman's right to privacy. It was about a right to privacy, but in this case, a woman's right to privacy. And did the Supreme Court, even though there's nothing in the Supreme Court that said every citizen of the United States shall have a right to privacy, that's nowhere in the Constitution. The Supreme Court in 1973 that ruled that a woman had a right to privacy was following the theory that the U.S. Constitution was a document that would evolve. You would think that over 230 years it would evolve, but there are still these right-wing neo-fascist, for the most part, Southerners and mostly male and all white, okay, with one exception, Uncle Clarence, who refuse to acknowledge that the Constitution is a document that should grow. Now, if you believe these people that the Constitution is a document that should not grow, then then so many of the laws that are now part of the Constitution would not be there, especially laws protecting a person's right to vote, specifically a not white person, laws like that. And of course, that's what these redneck Southern white males want, like Jeff Sessions. That's what Trump wants when he says, "Make America white again." Where was I? Now, supporters of a woman's right to privacy, i.e., a woman's right to obtain an abortion if she chooses. Supporters of that right suggested that Senator Collins had been tricked, snookered. Elise Hoag, president of NARAL, Pro-Choice America, said, NARAL being National Abortion Rights Action League, she said, quote, "With all due respect to Senator Collins, settled law means nothing. It's a bunch of code words long used by many conservative judges meant to hide their real beliefs and their anti-choice record. Why don't they say anti-privacy record? God damn it. Now, on the other side of this issue, opponents of abortion are optimistic that no matter what Kavanaugh says, he will vote to end legal abortion. He cannot end abortion. There's no fucking power on earth that can end abortion. But they can end legal abortion. That's all they can do. Okay? And the opponents of a woman's right to privacy are pretty convinced that Kavanaugh will vote the way they want him to vote, where it concerns the abortion issue. Because remember what Trump said, that his judges will be pro-life. Trump said that. Jesus Christ. In an interview on CNN with Dana Bash, I think it was just yesterday, Sunday. Yeah, just yesterday. I didn't see it, but it's being reported here by CNN. In that interview yesterday, Senator Lindsey Graham Cracker, who is staunchly anti-abortion Republican from South Carolina, who no longer has John McCain to restrain some of Graham Cracker's more outrageous comments and actions, and Graham Cracker's on his own now. He's going to turn into the flaming right winger that he always has been. But McCain kept some of the more obvious abuses of conservatism away from Lindsey. Not anymore. Anyway, Graham on CNN yesterday acknowledged that saying a case is settled doesn't mean shit. Although that's not what Graham said. What Graham said doesn't mean it can't be overturned. The Supreme Court can overturn its own damn self, right? Anyway, Graham said on CNN, quote, "Well, here's what I hope he will do if there's a case before him that challenges Roe v. Wade, that he would listen to both sides of the story, apply a test to overturn precedent. Precedent is important, but not inviolate." I'd like to see a show of hands. Anyone want to tell me what Lindsey Graham said or what he meant? No, I don't see any hands up. I don't know either. You know, a little less than a week ago, when a couple of primaries were held in Arizona, I think, and in Florida, the mayor of Tallahassee, Andrew Gillum, got the Democratic nomination for to be governor of the state. And if you remember what I said at the time, every single poll conducted by reliable polling organizations, every single poll had indicated that the daughter of Senator Bob Graham, I forget Miss Graham's first name, but that she, without a doubt, was going to win the Democratic nomination for governor. And then, surprise, surprise, Gillum won. And the liberals, of course, went wild. Here they had the perfect candidate for governor, a Bernie Sanders candidate. What could be better? And he had some experience, mayor of Tallahassee, state capital. But supposing, just for a moment, supposing that vote in the Democratic primary had been rigged specifically to make sure that Andrew Gillum, Tallahassee's mayor, would win the nomination? Just what if? Now, before you send me an email and say, well, you racist motherfucker. No. Race has nothing to do with this. Something else has to do with this. But just supposing that the vote had been rigged. I mean, vote rigging happens, especially in Florida. The Florida voting system can go any way the power in Florida wants it to go. Why would they rig it so Gillum would win? Well, there is an ongoing federal investigation by the FBI into public corruption in Tallahassee. The FBI is investigating whether out-of-town developers were able to influence City of Tallahassee development projects. That case had already become fodder for political attacks against Gillum. Representative Ron DeSantis, the racist pig who is the Republican nominee for governor, said on the Fox Sewer after the primary win, his primary win on the Republican side, DeSantis said, quote, he is embroiled in a lot of corruption scandals. This guy can't even run the city of Tallahassee. There is no way Florida voters can entrust him with our entire state. Oh, maybe we should give it to you, DeSantis. Now, Gillum's level of exposure or involvement or whatever you want to call it is not clear. He has said repeatedly that the FBI has told him that he was not a focus of the investigation. And his campaign officials have said the same thing and tried to turn the attack from this thug DeSantis back onto DeSantis. Jeff Bergen, who was Gillum's or is Gillum's spokesman, Jeff Bergen said, quote, Mayor Gillum is not a subject of the FBI investigation, and he's committed to rooting out any corruption or wrongdoing in Tallahassee. We're not going to take ethics lectures from Congressman Ron DeSantis, who is marching in lockstep with the most morally, ethically, and legally challenged president in American history. End quote. Well, that's all of that's very true. And I can accept that, and you can accept that, and rational people can accept that. But we're talking about Florida voters. We're talking about white, racist, neo-fascist, nasty-ass, conservative Republican voters, and voters in general in Florida. In a situation like this. Now, I doubt if any Democrats are going to come out and vote for DeSantis, but there may be a lot of so-called independents who will buy the bullshit and say, you know, I'm not going to vote for another black criminal. I mean, Obama wasn't even born here. Right? It's Florida. It's Chinatown, Jake. The FBI declined to comment on the investigation. Now, according to CNN, Gillum has not been named in any of the subpoenas, but questions have been raised about his potential involvement, in part because the investigators have compelled information from Adam Corey, a lobbyist and longtime friend of Gillum, who volunteered as finance chair on Gillum's bid to be mayor of Tallahassee in 2014. Adam Corey, hundreds of his emails have been posted online at Gillum's direction, which Gillum may have made a mistake because they become fodder for Republican groups that will spend millions of dollars looking to stop Gillum's campaign. Oh, God. Now, Gillum's ties to Corey You should know this. Gillum's ties to Adam Corey, whom Gillum met while they were both in school, in college. But the relationship, apparently, in Florida has raised questions. The Tallahassee Democrat, which is the newspaper there, reported about 3 years ago that Gillum's decision in 2013, when he was a city commissioner, to vote to fund a multi-million-dollar project that was tied to Corey, tied to Adam Corey, through the city's community redevelopment agency, raised questions because of their friendship, even though city lawyers had determined that Gillum did not have a conflict of interest. Now, you know how this shit goes. First your money, then your clothes. You know how this shit goes. By the time this campaign reaches mid-October, 6 weeks from now, the neo-fascist slash Republican attack machine in this country will have painted Gillum as the worst thief since Al Capone, who belongs in prison, who has been involved in sexually abusing little white babies, who is part of a ring of pedophiles who provide five-year-olds to Catholic priests and should be run out of Tallahassee on a rail. That's how it's going to be. Let's take a break. A momentary break here. There's a little bit more about Mr. Gillum and Adam Corey that I want to share with you when we come back.
Bend down, Congress, kneel down and lend a hand. Tell the people liberty must go. There's more to gain in war than peace. Let the weapons flow. Destabilize the Middle East. Enrich the CEO. Lie down, people. Lay down your Bill of Rights. Tell James Madison we had to let those amendments go.
Hi, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. As you know, we've switched formats and are now broadcast exclusively on the Progressive Voices Network. So that means you get fewer program interruptions, no corporate commercials, and lots of profanity. But our format change also means some of our radio listeners no longer hear the program. It's been a while since I mentioned our podcasts, so you may have forgotten that there is a way to listen to this program anytime you need a good dose of screaming. Visit MikeMalloy.com and subscribe to our podcast. You have your choice. You can listen to The Ranting with the audio podcast or listen and watch me lose control with a video podcast subscription. As a podcast subscriber, you can download the program to your mobile device and take me with you wherever you go. And if you have a friend who needs a dose of truth-seeking, you can give a gift subscription as well. That's MikeMalloy.com and never miss a minute of the uncensored fun and frivolity.
Gillum, who wants to be the Democratic governor of Florida, and his buddy Adam Corey, who is up to his neck in rattlesnakes, apparently. Now, going back just a little bit, when Andrew Gillum was a city commissioner, he voted in favor of funding a multi-million-dollar project tied to Adam Corey, through the city's community development agency, even though the city lawyers, like I said that the mayor, at the time city commissioner, had no conflict of interest. Well, the money was used by Adam Corey and his other partners to convert a turn-of-the-century electric plant into an upscale restaurant named Edison. Now, the questions about this relationship between the mayor of Tallahassee Andrew Gillum, who is now the Democratic nomination for governor, and Adam Corey, who is under investigation by the feds, and the connection between Adam Corey, a lobbyist and longtime Gillum friend, who volunteered as finance chair on Gillum's mayoral campaign, and because in this investigation the FBI has forced Mr. Corey to answer lots of questions, so this is where we stand. Now, the questions grew when the Tallahassee Democrat, the newspaper there, reported on Gillum and Corey vacationing together in Costa Rica, where they agreed to meet with a third guy. You need to know this, a guy named Mike Miller. Now, that is a fake name. That's a name used by one of three FBI agents posing as developers once they were back in Florida. Why didn't they do this to Trump? Gillum's chief of staff told the Tallahassee Democrat that the trip was not business-related and that the mayor was on vacation there with friends. Questions have also been raised about a trip in 2016 to New York where Corey and Mike Miller, the FBI undercover guy, were also present. A local television station in Tallahassee published a photo in August of 2017 that showed Adam Corey, Andrew Gillum, and an FBI agent sitting in the back of a boat in New York Harbor with the Statue of Liberty in the background. Woohoo! Now, according to public documents, those undercover FBI agents who were posing as developers got close to city officials and lobbyists in an attempt to sniff out public corruption. FBI agents subpoenaed thousands of records in June 2017, and Gillum's office posted those records online so everybody could see them. Good move. Reporting from the Tallahassee Democrat found that a cadre of city officials and power brokers have been named in the subpoenas. A whole bunch of them. But Gillum's campaign says, hey, we have no connection to the probe. In fact, we've pledged to work with the FBI. The next sound you hear will be my head dropping onto this desk. Thud. Now, even it doesn't make any difference if there's anything there or not there where it concerns Andrew Gillum. Doesn't make any difference. The Republican Governors Association has already put out a digital ad about this probe. And a spokesman for the Republican Governors Association told CNN that this is just the beginning. You know, they're going to gut Gillum. DeSantis can make all the filthy little 10-year-old racist statements he wants to make. Gillum will just give him the emotional finger, tell him to go fuck himself. That won't hurt him. But this other stuff just might. The spokesman for the Republican Governors Association said, quote, this FBI investigation will haunt Andrew Gillum's gubernatorial campaign and will be a very lethal attack. Haunt. Lethal. Fuck. I mean, whoa. Whoa. Now, a spokesman for the Democratic Governors Association, Jared Leopold, responded. He said, quote, Ron DeSantis has spent his political career pandering to far-right fringe elements by voting to raise the retirement age, jack up health care costs on Floridians with pre-existing conditions. The Republican Governors Association is desperate to rewrite history now that they're saddled with a candidate who is more extreme than Trump. Well, Mr. Leopold, that's all true, and of course you didn't use very original phraseology there, but do you think it's really going to make independents or moderate Republicans say, well, fuck it, I'm going to vote for the Democrat? No, I don't think so. Now, this is a part that really makes me, I'm sorry, suspicious of Mr. Gillum. Really makes me suspicious of Mr. Gillum. According to CNN, despite the long-term friendship between these two men, the Democratic candidate for governor, Andrew Gillum, and his buddy, Adam Corey, despite traveling together, doing things together, hanging out together, despite all that, Mr. Gillum now refers to Adam Corey as just a campaign volunteer. Really? Just a campaign volunteer. Somebody that you traveled with to Costa Rica for vacation, travel with to New York on business, has worked as your spokesman, and now you're identifying him, Mr. Gillum, as just a campaign volunteer. That's like they referred to Papadopoulos as a coffee boy in the Trump scandal. Watch this space. As Rachel Maddow would say. Okay, turning from the insane to the practical. How about this one? This is from Maryland. A lot of schools up north start school tomorrow. That's the way it always was when I went to school. It was the usually the Monday. Or no, it would be the Thursday after Labor Day we'd go to school, which was insane because we go to school Thursday and Friday and have a weekend off and then start. But and here in Georgia, Molly started school when? August 6th?
8th or something.
August 8th? Yeah, she's already had tests. She's due for her first progress report. But up north, and by that I mean Montgomery County, Maryland, even though it's south of the Mason-Dixon line, don't you know? High school students will be going back to school tomorrow. And some of them will have an extra resource available to them, made available to them by the schools. You know, you can get tutoring. You can get after-school help from your teacher. There are sports. And this year, the kids, students, the high school students, will have another resource available if they want them, condoms. Why, you may ask? I can just see the Christians going fucking berserk over this one. Record rates of sexually transmitted diseases across the country, as well as in Montgomery County, Maryland, where this is being applied, have alarmed local officials who say distributing condoms in schools is one quick and easy way to help. The county health officer, a Dr. Travis Gales, said, quote, "This is a public health crisis," end quote. STDs, sexually transmitted diseases. Teenage pregnancy. Teenage abortions. And a good way to stop most of that is through some form of birth control. And one of the best forms of birth control is for the boys to slip on a condom. No glove, no love. Now, this is an issue that's very pertinent to Kathy and me because we have a daughter who's 14. And we have had our talks, Kathy and Molly and me, about how by age 16, some enormous percentage of American girls are sexually active. So how do we deal with this, Kathy and me? We just tell her, if you have sex before you're married, you will die of some horrible disease. No. No, we don't. No, I'm just kidding. We have explained. We have explained to Molly that her sexuality, and more importantly, in a manner of speaking, the sexuality of these horny little boys she'll be around, will be in full flower very soon. Now, how do you deal with it? Well, there's abstinence, which is, I guess, abstinence that is willfully taken on. Okay. But even that, I think, requires backup of some sort. If not a preventive measure with the girl, then certainly with the boy, and hopefully both. But I know where we live. We live in the United States. I know, you know, blah, 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 blah. I know the attitude. Well, you give them condoms, they're going to want to screw like little bunnies. Well, they said the same thing about the, what was the shot that kids get? The human papilloma?
HPV.
HPV shot. Human papilloma? Sounds like a...
Human papilloma
virus. Sounds like a song from Argentina. Yeah, I know what they are. It just sounds... I know genital warts.
Papilloma.
Yeah. Anyway, do you remember all the noise that the Christians made about getting injected with a vaccine to prevent human papilloma virus from causing cervical cancer in women? Well, Molly's had those shots, right? And every little boy should, well, not little boy, but every teenage boy should have them too to prevent. It's the only form of cancer, it's my understanding, the only form of cancer that can actually be prevented with a vaccination. But you know what they say about vaccines? They'll make you see triple or fall down or some such bullshit. But anyway, in order to deal with the public health crisis of STDs nationally and in Montgomery County public schools, the county will start stocking condoms at the health centers it runs in four of the county's public high schools. And officials in that county say these condoms will be free to all high school students. And two members of the county school board, by the way, are pushing to get condoms stocked not only in the county-run health centers, but in all high schools and in middle schools as well. Yeah, middle schools as well. A woman named Jill Ortman-Faust, who's a member of the County Board of Education, said, quote, "I, along with a lot of parents, thought we must have condoms available. It is a public health measure akin to vaccinations," end quote. Now, providing condoms, of course, it's nothing new in high schools. This is nothing new. Several other Maryland school districts do, as well as school districts in Washington, D.C., New York City, Los Angeles, Boston, Colorado, California, all kinds of places. And several different studies have shown that making condoms or other contraception and comprehensive sex education available reduces unwanted pregnancy and reduces the incidence of sexually transmitted diseases, all of it dramatically. And it does nothing to increase the rates of young boys and young girls getting it on. And in some cases, it can even decrease the rates of teen sex because it brings the issue out of the back seat of a car or your parents' bedroom when no one's home or wherever. It takes the issue of teenage sexuality and teenage intercourse. It takes it out of the shadows and puts it right up front so the kids can stare at it and the kids can realize, hey, shit, man, no, I ain't getting pregnant. I'm not going to be the one who participates in a pregnancy, boys and girls together. I'm not going to do that. I want to go to college. I want a profession. I want to travel. I'll have kids someday, but not now. No. And I damn sure don't want an STD. So by bringing the topic of juvenile sex or teenage sex into the open, It can result in a decrease in the number of sexually active teenagers. Now, I'll tell you one thing that will not result in a decrease is lecturing and threatening and coming up with this bullshit that these Christian churches have come up with of abstinence only. Are you out of your fucking mind? You're talking about people at not necessarily the girls, but the boys, at near the height of their sexuality, their sexual impulses. And the girls, well, maybe not at the apex of their sexual drive, they're certainly close. So you have you have kids who are sexually charged anyway, just biologically, and then take a look at the pop culture where sexual attitudes are all over the place. Then take a look at the president of the fucking United States who says, oh, you can grab them by the pussy. They love it. So what are you going to do? Are you going to say, oh, well, you know, my kid wouldn't do that. And I don't want her knowing anything about condoms. And I don't want him knowing anything about those horrible little bugs that can crawl up his penis and make him feel bad. Which is a dumb shit attitude. Now, Montgomery County, Maryland, discussed the possibility of providing condoms 20 years ago, but it never went very far because the Christians said, no, no, no! Jesus didn't screw! Really? Okay. Montgomery County has its own boom in sexually transmitted infections right now. Diagnoses of chlamydia and gonorrhea are at their highest rate in a decade. The woman I quoted a minute ago who's on the school board said, quote, if people hadn't backed down before about having condoms in high schools, then maybe we wouldn't have doubled the numbers of sexually transmitted infections now. And I will watch and report on this story because while I realize that there are school districts, just like the article said, there are school districts that have been providing preventive measures for sexually active teenagers for a long time. Every time the issue comes up, the Christians go absolutely bat shit. We'll be right back. You know, the truth is that the future of the structure of American law, to a large degree, on critical issues, rests in the hands of two members of the Senate when the vote comes up. That's Senator Lisa Murkowski and Senator Susan Collins. Huh?
Susan Collins.
Both Murkowski and Collins have in the past been pro-woman's right to privacy, including a woman's right to make her own reproductive decisions. I hope, and this is a very thin straw that I'm holding on to, I hope Murkowski and Collins will not confirm this bastard because Kavanaugh, he's going to lie through his teeth. Now, one of the reasons you know he's going to lie is the fact that the Trump administration is holding back more than 100,000 pages of documents related to Kavanaugh's time in the judiciary because the White House and the Department of Justice have determined that those papers are protected by constitutional privilege. Chuck Schumer, Senate Minority Leader, said the decision to withhold the documents amounts to, quote, a Friday night document massacre. Schumer added, quote, President Trump's decision to step in at the last moment and hide 100,000 pages of Kavanaugh's records from the American public is not only unprecedented in the history of Supreme Court nominations, it has all the markings of a cover-up. End quote. Why, of course. Why, of course. The mere fact that Trump is involved at all in the nomination of this creep, in the withholding of documents that are necessary for the senators to make, don't laugh, an informed decision. I said don't laugh. Come on. The fact that Trump is involved immediately makes everything about the issue suspect and probably criminal because of Trump. One of the issues, and I'll get into this more tomorrow because we're just about out of time here, but one of the issues critical to workers in this country is, as Charles Pierce puts it, writing in Esquire, he writes, today is Labor Day, and on Tuesday, the Senate Judiciary Committee will begin hearings into the nomination and inevitable confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to a lifetime position on the Supreme Court of the United States. Much of the attention, Pierce writes, rightly, will be drawn to Kavanaugh's dreadful history on reproductive rights, as well as to whether, as well as to whatever is stashed away in the 100,000 documents that the Trump administration is keeping buried regarding what Kavanaugh did during the torture years under George W. Bush. But it shouldn't be overlooked that his record on labor issues is every bit as retrograde as any other part of his Federalist Society bona fides. And then Pierce, and I'll do this tomorrow, Pierce then quotes a bit from an article in Mother Jones that lays out fairly, or not fairly, but completely explicit and very clear as to what Brett Kavanaugh, is it Brett? Yeah, Brett Kavanaugh, what his attitude is where it concerns that non-existent working class that I was talking about last hour, the one who's celebratory day is today. Well, it's about over now since it's almost 11 p.m. here in the East. But we'll get into Kavanaugh's mortal threats against organized labor. You know, we truly are watching the deconstruction, as Bannon put it, as Lenin put it, of the regulatory state, as well as the watching the deconstruction of the latter parts of it. I'll see you tomorrow. In the meantime, take care and keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Hey, Truth Seekers. I have an important update for you about my upcoming memoir, A Hunter Thompson-esque Journey of Experience, Observation, and Political Awakening of Yours Truly. It's about 90% finished and soon headed to the publisher. It's posted in book form on the Kickstarter page for supporters who pre-ordered the book. And you can read it online right now. Just go to the Kickstarter page. Photos, hate mail, and other memorabilia will be added to the print version. And I think you'll love that. Did you miss the pre-order offer? Well, if you did, don't worry. You now have a second chance to order the book online. And since all the original rewards are claimed, I'll sign your copy as a special second chance pre-order thank you. So visit MikeMalloy.com for all the details. Oh, and coming soon, watch for updates on the fall book signing glamping weekend with the Malloys in the North Georgia Mountains. Keep checking MikeMalloy.com for more information.